Dave Glover Show is sponsored by the Michaels Flooring Outlet, the flooring experts. IGotFloor.com.
With Ricky Horton is sponsored by Goodwill. Give hope, give local, give Goodwill.
Oh, you're the best friend that I ever had.
It's our song, Ricky.
Been with you such a long time.
Such a long time.
You know, I still have the Doors in my head. I was listening to them as I was walking by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame today in the rain, and
nice.
I had this really cool moment of that's kind of how it should be, right? When you're listening to some of those oldies and really, really fun. And I also went by the Museum of Illusories, or whatever that is, Illusory Museum. I think I saw it. I'm not really sure. It's like, what the heck was that? I had an interesting walk today, that's for sure.
That is a quality joke right there.
It came to me while I thought I was seeing it. So I'm around quality jokesters, so it's rubbing off, I guess.
Who is the funniest guy you work with?
The funniest guy I work with is Brad Thompson.
He's funny.
He's on our team, and he has got. I mean, the dude is
great timing.
He's got incredibly good timing, and he is quick minded too. So he's very quick witted. So you know, his jokes, sometimes you have to say, wait a minute, can I take a timeout and think about this? Can I get like a batter gets a timeout? I think he ought to get a timeout listening to Brad because he's so fast.
That's great. So we had Bernie Miklas on a couple hours ago, Rick, and he gave us sort of his analysis of the first half of the season. Just off the top of your head, what are your major impressions?
Very good. I think good, solid team in all aspects. And you look at the pitching, a little better than you thought. The rotation, for sure. Some guys, you know, Miles Michaelis has rebounded, and Palante's held his own. And, you know, it's not like anybody's wowing you in really any aspect of the team, but they're all good. And the bullpen's been good. And the hitting's been better than we thought. I mean, they're just kind of good all the way around. The defense has probably, you know, been the part that's been better than we expected. I mean, they're the best defensive team in baseball right now, but there really isn't kind of you're not looking at a bunch of all-stars on this Cardinal team. You're just looking at a bunch of good players that are playing well.
Yeah, and there are two ways to go about this, right? I mean, the Cardinals have emphasized, and I know Bill DeWitt Jr., John Mozeliak have talked about stars being important. That's why they went out and got Goldschmidt when they did, why they got Nolan Arenado. We know what, you know, with Yachty and Albert and all the crew that came before that, stars definitely matter. But if you don't have them, the way to win, the way to put together a team is to have depth and have as many decent to above average to even good players as you have if you don't have that anchor in the middle of it.
Yeah, and I think the depth has been best when it comes to the bullpen. The guys that are revolving up from AAA are all doing well. I mean, Matt Swanson looks really good. Riley O'Brien looks outstanding right now. He looks like he belongs, and he's acting like he belongs, not in an arrogant way, but he just, there's no kind of fear in him. He's just, give me the ball and go after guys. And so I feel like, you know, a lot of guys are developing and getting better. You know, I said at the beginning of spring training, I kept bringing this up, and I took some criticism for it, but, you know, that's what happened in 1985. A bunch of young guys 40 years ago that just got better at the same time. I think there's several of them. Now, are they going to go to the World Series? I'm not saying that, but it is nice to see development happen.
Well, if you look at a lot of the preseason projections, which are what they are, and they tend to kind of pull everybody toward the middle, right? Like most of the analytics projections, they're always going to pull the top teams down and the bottom teams up a little. They don't like outliers. But they also had the Cardinals as roughly a 500-ish team. Some had them a little below 80 wins. Some had an 82, 83. So you're ahead of that at the halfway point. You're actually on a pace to win 88 to 90 games, depending on which way it goes. And again, we all agree. We all saw the last 25 years. We all know the team has been much better than that in a lot of years. But it's still exceeding expectations. I think if you do that again in the second half, we can talk about September being fun.
And that's what you want. You want it to be fun, and, of course, you want to go further than that. But one other bright thing I've been kind of contemplating is just the fact that the Cardinals had this hard road of interleague games. The Cardinals have played 35 interleague games, and the Cubs have played 15. That, I mean, that's a big difference. And I think interleague games can be challenging because you're having to prepare for new pitchers and all of that. And I just think that that could be an advantage in the second half. And I think the Cardinals have done a masterful job. I think Dusty Blake and Dean Kiekhoefer, Ollie, everybody that's kind of running the pitching needs to get a pat on the back for keeping guys healthy as they have by using the spot starter. I just think that's worked in the revolving bullpen. I mean, the Cardinals have been healthier than most teams.
So I was saying to Bernie, and I know that there's no magic fix for this, but I was glad to see that both he and Wheels agreed with me that we have always been a team of stars. You go back over every era, there's always been one to three or four stars, and we have great players today, and we have a couple of stars, but they're at the twilight
maybe
of their careers.
Making, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, well,
yeah.
On the each end of it. Yeah, good point.
Yeah. So but I would say this. Willie McGee wasn't a star at the end of the 1984 season,
no.
But he was at the end of the 85, so you can develop into that,
point.
Too. I mean, is it possible that Alec Burleson is developing into being a star? Could Ivan Herrera be that kind of guy where you look back? Terry Pendleton wasn't a star. Not even close to being a star when he came to the big leagues and ended up being an MVP for the Atlanta Braves and one of the great third basemen of that era. So you hope that they're going to develop into them along the way.
Interesting matchups these next couple of series, Ricky. Obviously, we know Pittsburgh very well. They have a hard time scoring runs, but you'll face Skeens again, which for the Cardinals hasn't been a big deal. They've beaten Skeens more than they've lost to him. So.
Yeah, but there's your regression to the mean problem.
Exactly right.
That I'm fearful of.
Yeah, the due factor, right? He's due. But Cleveland is super interesting because they can really pitch. Their bullpen, man, you don't want to be behind them going into the seventh inning with Gattis and Smith
and Class A.
Class A, and they just got their big lefty Sobrowski back today. So they're scary, but they've only scored 66 runs this month.
Yeah, no, it's been a weird thing for them. Ollie was talking about him just down in his clubhouse a few minutes ago, and he was saying how what is good about this lineup is they make contact. I mean, these guys just don't strike out, and eventually he thinks their offense is going to get better. You know, a guy like Lane Thomas has been hurt a lot. He's only hitting .173, and we know how important he was to Cleveland last year, and how much we miss him. But there are other guys in this lineup that have been kind of coming back after injury. I just think they're going to get better. And, one of my favorite players to watch play is not playing tonight.
Right,
I'm okay
right.
with that is Jose Ramirez.
That's a big break, man.
Boy.
If you're looking at – if you're Sonny Gray and you're looking at any lineup and you can take a guy like Ramirez who – Ricky, I think he's making himself – he's got time to work at it, but I think he's making himself a Hall of Fame candidate. He's so good.
I don't think there's any doubt about that, and he's so far under the radar when it comes to that. But I'm trying to get a note down to him to say that it's okay to take 3 days off if he's. I mean, no, he doesn't need to feel guilty about that. He can play. It's a long season.
He got hit by a pitch in yesterday's game. For anybody listening, which is why Jose Ramirez is not in the lineup today. A little sore with that forearm.
And most people have gotten hit by a pitch over the last few weeks.
It's been spicy.
Has been a little spicy, and it's a little hot, and you get those things together, and it makes for some interesting competitive moments. But honestly, I don't want to blame it on a thing, but I do think hitters dive a lot more than they used to dive.
Yep.
And there's several of the pitches that I saw a montage of hit by pitches, and about a third of them were almost strikes. And so it's like, well, how can you get all hit by an almost strike? Well, because they're keeping their hands towards the plate. They're diving in, and I don't want to say you're hitting yourself, but almost.
Well, you are putting yourself in position, and look, we know that the pitchers are not as free to throw at hitters as they used to be, and a lot of protective gear. You got some guys wear the C flap to cover their face, and you got all the hand pads and the elbow guards and all that stuff. I mean,
so the gear has changed. I think that's the number one thing. So you have the gear on, you're not afraid to get hit, and then you get hit, and it still hurts anyway. So you're still mad. I mean, it's like, wait a minute, I had this gear on. How come that hurts so badly?
You know something I miss? I was watching the Ken Burns baseball last night. We're up to the 60s and 70s.
Nice.
When the umpires had the shield.
Oh, yeah, the big pad on the outside.
The big pad on the outside.
Oh,
People younger than 50 probably don't even know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Well, it was a different game, you're talking about a time where umpires were actually different in the American League and the National League. They were
right.
They had different strike zones, and you knew that. And when you got traded from one league to another, you had to adjust to that. And the game actually felt different. Now every game is like an American League game, but at back then the National League was a different style and a different. different umpired game.
So here's one. Rick, I'm sure you've been involved in these. When the manager comes out and he's kicking dirt on the umpire and he's doing this and he's effing this and you're a trash and blah, blah, blah. How do you go out and shake the guy's hand at the next game? That just seems so awkward.
Well, it's wait a minute. People that have brothers know what that's like, right?
And
it's like, how can those two get along? We're going to have to separate that. One of our kids is going to have to move, honey. I mean, you feel like you want to say that, but honestly, everybody knows it's just a competitive part of that. I thought it was kind of interesting that Wilson Contreras was very contrite and kind of mea culpa about the moment that he had with his former team at the last game of the homestand. He was regretful, I think, of it. And then, you hear that and you go, yeah, I get it. I mean, you're competing, you're mad, it's hot.
Yeah.
And I actually did hear Ollie share how incredibly difficult it was to play the last few games, both teams, because of the heat down on the field. I mean, it gets tempers short. That's part of the equation.
Yeah. In the moment, when they're in that moment, you can get it, right? Because it was just a week ago that Wilson making a mistake at first base led to a collision, and he was on the other end of that. Like, hey,
right?
Doesn't matter if it's on purpose or not. You got to know what you're doing. You got to be careful because you're going to hurt somebody. And then he was kind of the opposite end of that last night, where you're telling a pitcher, dude, you're throwing 100. You can't throw here. But it's in the moment you're not thinking, I have to be logical with everything I've ever done. At the moment, you're like, I'm mad because I almost got smoked in the face.
So my best explanation of this is I used to love to play pickup basketball. Basketball was my first love. I loved playing. I'd shoot all the time. I just loved playing college. Even in St. Louis, played at the MAC for several years. I had Joe Buck on my team, in fact. We used to fight to see who would have to pass the ball in, because once it was passed in, you'd never get it back. So between me and him on the team we were on, and I had a blast with that. But I will say this. If you want to find out who I really am, come watch me in a pickup basketball game, because I become a little bit nastier.
You got sharp elbows is what you're telling me.
I got a little New York in me is the way I like to say it.
So, Rick, you'll appreciate this.
John's giving me a gesture right now, right next to me.
Is it a New York gesture?
Maybe.
When Maureen and I were first dating, I played on an indoor soccer team with her brother-in-law, and we were playing a team of priests. And I lose my mind so much when
is this the beginning of a joke, Dave, or is this is true?
And I put this one into the wall so hard he had to be taken out by ambulance. And it was a new relationship, and she was like, "Can we talk about the priest thing?" I'm like, "Did you see him? Did you see him sweat me the whole night?"
Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. Right. I'd love to hear that confession.
Right. No, I'm a nice guy until you get me on a field, and then I just...
That's right. I get it. Well, and you want to do it with respect, but, when you're competing, I think it tests us. I think when you compete, it tests your ability to have some self-control, which is obviously better to have that. But I think that's kind of a training ground for the rest of life. If you're in a business meeting and you get some of those same feelings, mm-hmm. that you don't necessarily, throw elbows in the business meeting. I mean, you got to find a way to understand those feelings, but then kind of keep them in check.
All right, buddy. Have a great weekend.
All right, guys.
I really love you. Some people call me the space cowboy. Yeah, some call me the gangster of love.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 424. So if you guys were watching on the stream a while ago, Rach lost her pin, and then she had a grease pin where she writes little notes to me, and she flipped it behind her, and it went behind a console. So on the break, live on TV, we were trying to get behind the console, and we're moving it, like Rach and I are moving it, and it's moving, like you move a big, giant television console. And then Wheeler lumbers over and grabs the whole thing. He's like, "Wheeler, move." And just picks it up, and there are like 18 pins back there.
We completely replenished the empty pin cup.
Yes.
So you're welcome, KMOX.
We just did a service for the company.
Yes, we did. So you're my peak performer. Who's yours?
Lars Nootbaar.
Okay.
Finally, he's back in today. He may have missed the last couple of games because he had a rib cage thing. But he's the game day men's performance peak performer for today. And of course, you can get back to the top of your game with Game Day Men's Health at gamedaymenshealth.com. But what he's finally started to do, Dave, is wake up. We talked about most of June, him really struggling. He got moved down the lineup. He's hitting fifth today because he started to wake up. So in the last week, hitting over 300, slugging 800. Over the last 2 weeks, he's got three home runs and seven runs batted in. He's not to get two numbers heavy, but you know the slug is almost 600. So he, for the last 2 weeks, has finally started to awaken, and they need him. Like, they need him to be good.
What are the chances that his downfall the last month or so was because of his intercostal problem?
It's possible. I mean, they haven't said anything about it. You know, kind of like if you look at Donovan's numbers, Bernie brought that up earlier. Like, he struggled in June. That's around the same time he had the foot problem. And even minor things can cause small changes, especially with a hitter. I mean, it's true for a pitcher's mechanics, too. But even the smallest thing being wrong changes the timing of things that happen. Yeah. And if you're favoring a foot, maybe you're not moving exactly the same way. And all you got to do is be an eighth of an inch off.
Did you happen to hear Tony La Russa on the Sports Open line last night?
I heard.
Yeah. So what I heard him say about the analytics is that it's great, it's wonderful, it helps you to prepare your players, but it should stop at the door, and we shouldn't be accosting and boring people with it because he doesn't think it's good for the game.
As far as conversation pieces,
yeah,
to a degree, he's right. Like, you know, I try to use fewer numbers when I can because the numbers part people are boring. But it does help us on the outside understand why something's happening, right? So I can look and see, oh, wow, he's chasing more pitches out of the strike zone than he used to. That's information we didn't used to have. Why is he not hitting more home runs? Ah, well, his bat speed slipped. Wonder why that happened. Maybe it's a physical thing, something to keep an eye on. So overall, I think it's good, but I think it's good to stay away as much as you can from what the statistic is and talk about what it means, right? So like when you say something like slug or batting average, we all get that. That's simple. But when we start talking about bat speed and hard hit rates and things like that, nobody cares about those numbers. They're boring. But what does it mean? And, you know, it's funny because Tony La Russa and Dave Duncan were basically analytics before analytics existed. Dave Duncan's analytics was just books. He wrote everything down. He charted every pitch and everything that happened against this hitter and that team and everything else. So it wasn't done from an analytics department. But I think what Tony's pointing out is the good part. It's hard to figure out how to communicate it effectively. Because what matters is, how is it going to be received? Are you helping people understand more, or are you confusing them more? Yeah. And that's true for dealing with players, too.
Sure.
And what Tony and Dave Duncan were great at was translating all that information in Dave Duncan's books into things that the players could act on simply and understand.
Makes sense. Happy, weird, rainy, blue sky out on the horizon Friday. I like it.
Yeah, it's a nice switch up after everything we've been dealing with weather-wise. It was genuinely dark in here a couple segments ago. It's cozy.
My grass needs it. My plants need it. So kind of nice. I feel like putting a beanie on. I told the guys, like, makes me happy. Each day we do a rewind, and today we're going to preview what Rachel is doing for the Rachel Zimmerman Show this weekend, and who is it?
This weekend I talk to the executive producer and artistic director of the Muni, Mike Isaacson. So basically, I initially just set out like, hey, I want to feature the Muni. They've got a lot of great stuff going on, obviously, but let's reach out and see what the episode will be like. Mike is such an incredible conversationalist.
So.
He goes deep into every topic we explore. This is someone who is so insanely passionate and talented and could really be working anywhere in theater and chooses to be here in St. Louis and give us, you know, this quality product we have come to expect from the Muni.
Big ask. Do you feel like you know him well enough to get me on stage?
I can try. I will do my best.
I can be a newsboy.
Can you do Phantom of the Opera?
I can.
But no, it's a great conversation. I'm excited to play a little preview on the DGS today. The podcast for the Rachel Zimmerman Show is out now if you want to check it out. It'll also air tomorrow night at 7 and Sunday at 5 p.m. here on KMOX.
Nice. You know how I was talking about what I would do for a living?
Uh-huh.
If it weren't for this job?
Yes. Yeah.
I finally found it.
Yeah?
Let's hear it.
You can get paid $35 per poop in Japan.
Wow.
But only if your poop is good enough. It's a pharmaceutical company that's researching gut bacteria, and they say only 5 to 10% of people have the quality they're looking for.
I mean...
But as much as you can go, yeah, but they'll pay you per time.
So what are you getting, making $35 to $70 a day?
Not on a good day.
I just feel like even if I qualified, like if I were
not
one
when
of...
Dave takes his special pills.
If I were one of these people who had the caliber of waste they're looking yes. for, I feel like the performance anxiety, I just feel like I would never be able to go.
Oh, I feel you.
You know, I'd be like, I need to get paid, and then it just wouldn't happen.
You sit down with your manager.
You're like,
Rach, everyone here likes you.
It's
but,
like writer's block.
Like, I know, I just can't.
The publisher needs copy. I'm trying.
Prune juice, Rachel. A lifeguard was impaled by a beach umbrella in New Jersey on Wednesday. Get this.
Good.
The umbrella went through the woman's armpit and came out her back.
Oh, poor thing.
How? Like, was it propelled? Did she jump from a
wind.
Chair?
Oh. Yeah. Oh. Big wind hit
wow.
it.
Wow. Why is it like
flying.
A spear?
Yeah.
Shouldn't the top be like rounded off or something?
Get you in the armpit, brother.
Dang.
Yikes. I mean, I'm glad she's okay other than the umbrella impaling. I mean, they could have killed her.
Oh, God, yeah.
Man.
Absolutely. We live closer in time to the T-Rex than the T-Rex lived to the Stegosaurus.
Mm.
That's awesome.
Mm.
Stegosaurus, highly underrated dinosaur.
Yeah, I love the Stegosaurus.
Do you think it's underrated?
Spiky tail. I do.
I feel like he never gets brought up that much.
Yeah.
Him and Ankylodon. The Ankylodon always gets underrated.
Don't know the Ankylodon.
He's got the club tail. He used to bash people with it.
Is he kind of a round-faced
guy? Looks like a big armadillo.
Yeah. I'm familiar. Researchers in China have come up with a new way to treat sinus infections, and they say it works in animals. Instead of antibiotics, they shoot a swarm of microscopic robots up your nose.
I'm sure that's fine.
Yeah, I don't feel great about that. I'm going to pass on that one.
Happy Friday, guys. You are listening to The Dave Glover Show on KMOX. I'm Rachel Zimmerman. You know, sometimes on Fridays, Dave is nice enough to let me preview the Rachel Zimmerman Show that will air this weekend on KMOX. It airs Saturday night at 7 p.m. and Sunday at 5 p.m. The podcast is out now. I have a really great guest this week. His name is Mike Isaacson. He is the executive producer and artistic director at the Muni. He has so much knowledge to share. The Muni is such an incredible theater. We're so lucky to have it. Here's a little preview of our conversation. You just won a Tony. Describe what that reaction was like from the whole team. What that was like.
You know, it's great. I'd recommend it to anybody. it was a big surprise. And I've said this before. I'd kind of given up. It didn't, you know, I thought maybe we might be... we might receive it around the 100th because that felt really obvious to me and that didn't happen. Mm. And it's not anything you can apply for. It's not, you know, it is something that is granted through this, I now understand, labyrinth process between the American Theater Critics Association, the League, the Wing, this whole thing. And I got the call and I was shocked. I cried. Mm. And it's been interesting since then how much it really has meant to everybody. And I think it's, at least the way we're all sort of receiving it, you know, it's been acknowledgement of the transformation of this theater. It's been acknowledgement of the 107 years of this community supporting this theater. You know, it's not just one thing. But in that, you know, great Muni way, once the thing got to St. Louis, we threw a massive barbecue backstage. Everyone could take their pictures with it. You know, like everyone feels connected to it. That if there was anything that really knocked me off was how many people in St. Louis, in New York, around the country, even around the world, felt pride and connected to the Muni mm-hmm. and this recognition and this honor. So, you know, if you've worked really hard and you've tried to create something, and, you know, this is in a context of... It's pretty public information. A lot of theaters have fallen apart. It's a hard time for a theater. And we have waded through those waters successfully. Our audience is with us and engaged. And So it's sort of an acknowledgement of that too, I think.
Yeah, you know, you just brought up how much this theater means to so many people. When I was watching your Tony acceptance speech, Kofi Coleman talked about the fact that he started there as an usher.
Yeah.
Now he's the CEO.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about just the careers the Muni has launched, the dreams the Muni has launched.
You know, it has always been sort of what I acknowledge, sort of within the Broadway community, a premier starting ground. It is, you know, a badge, so to speak. And if anybody in New York sees Muni in your resume, that means a certain thing. Mm. And that is something that's really attractive to people because we're disciplined, we're focused, we're kind, we're funny. And the thing about the Muni, you have to understand, as compared to every other theater in the country, and particularly Broadway, you walk through the back gate and you see people painting your sets and building your sets, mm-hmm. and you see the customers, and you go into the canteen, and there's the workers, and they know each other, and you're sitting with the marketing partner. Like, you under, there's no way to work at the Muni and not understand that you're a part of something bigger, and then particularly when this glorious audience shows up, right? And it's been a part of their lives for all that. And that's actually very freeing for a lot of artists, because they can get in their heads and make it think it's all about them or their work, mm-hmm. only, and that's not what theater is. And In most other theaters, particularly on Broadway, you never see the sets being built. You never see the marketing department work 24 hours a day. You don't, if you're just in the theater, what that is. So it's a different sense, and that's a very important and powerful sense in how you treat other people and how you act and how you understand. And the other thing that's just because of the really tight time frame and what we need to do, you know, I always say we're a collection of Palominos. That's who we hire. And it's the kind of person who just sees the opportunity, understands what the need is for their colleagues, and fills it and goes forward. So it's a particular skill set that's freeing. And, you know, hundreds of actors and, you know, one of the premier Broadway producers this season, you know, has one of my former interns, and he came up to me and goes, I want to thank you for this, you know, this kid's name. And I was like, well, it's not like I raised him, but there's also a work ethic. We work really hard, and that's a Midwestern thing,
mm-hmm.
right? That's kind of, that's, you know, I was a Midwestern kid. That's kind of who we are. And that comes forward too. So it is a top thing we have, you know, and right now the number of applicants for all our summer internships, I mean, even this year for like 20 slots, I think we had like 750 applicants from around the country.
Wow.
So it's known in this community, in this culture, as a great place to work and where you're going to learn. And I am, when I meet with the interns early on, I try to just give them, I'm like, look at everyone's path different, and there's no one path. I mean, my path to get here doesn't make any sense, right? But There's things here that you can learn and decide, can you adapt that? Is this right for you? And the number one thing I say is just get in every room you can and listen and watch how these people are working. It's the best advice I got from my first boss at McDonnell Douglas. You know, like, he kind of had nothing for me to do. Interesting, you know, that first job thing. And I was like, he's like, you know what? I'm just going to put you in a room, sit in the back, and watch how this happens and how people treat each other and how to be a professional. It's great. And we really have that with our interns there. We try to expose them to everything. So they really see, and how I lead a meeting, how my colleagues lead, and how we treat each other. And, you know, I went to public grade schools, but I went to a Jesuit high school, and that's the whole knife sharpened on stone thing. And I'm a big believer in that. You know, and you have to be able to talk about conflict. Conflict is a necessary part of the creative process. But how you manage it and how people feel about it when you're through is the most important thing. Mm. And understand that that's okay. Because we will get something better if there's opposing forces shaping, coming around it, we will get something better. So it's all these fundamentals that we try to, you know, teach kids, I can say it, and they move forward. And then from the artist standpoint, like for the actors, you know, it's a very fast process compared to most theaters. I mean, yeah, we'll just leave it at that. But what happens is they come through it trusting themselves, realizing, oh, their first choice, their first instincts was spot on. Mm. Get out of your head, just do it. Give the gift you have. And that ends up being very powerful and freeing for them when they leave here.
Guys, catch the whole conversation with Mike Isaacson on the Rachel Zimmerman Show podcast, or listen Saturday night at 7 or Sunday at 5 p.m. right here on KMOX.